Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. Also, support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. JackAndrea.com.
And we welcome you to the morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and I am very, very happy and honored indeed to be sitting opposite a new friend, Betsy Ade. And many of you know the name Betsy Ade in a way that you did not know that name just a few months ago. Of course, Betsy Ade scored a really amazing success on the TV show The Voice. And also, as many of you know, her time on The Voice is now over. And Betsy Ade has come to our studios to talk about kind of the tail end of her experience of being part of this really exciting, amazing experience. And I'm just so pleased we can have this opportunity. Betsy Ade, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Hello. Thank you. It's nice to be home.
So, for those of you that maybe missed our first interview, you really should seek it out on the Morning Show Archive, because it was a really, really fun conversation in which we explored a lot of the past of Betsy Ade, where she comes from, what she's been doing, how she got into music, her work with well-known strangers, and then, of course, the exciting experience of getting on NBC's The Voice. And one thing I want to make sure people understand, Betsy, is that when you were with us, whenever that was, I don't remember the date, you already knew how everything was going to finish. I mean, everything had already played out.
Yes, there were two performances that were pre-recorded, so there were a lot of stories that happened, but we were advised not to give too much information. If it hadn't happened on TV, then it hadn't happened. That's kind of the advice that we were given.
Right.
So, which I completely understand.
Yeah. So you've been walking around with a lot of stories inside your head, mm-hmm. And now that the rest of us know kind of the end of your experience on The Voice, now it's time that you can do a little more talking, at least some. But that's actually one of the first questions I wanted to ask you is, what are you able to talk about? I mean, are you free to, in effect, share just about anything about any aspect of your experience on The Voice, or are there certain limitations?
Yeah, I think there's – I think the last time we talked about how they take such really like they take really good care of the contestants on the show. And one of the things that we did after we were eliminated, or we didn't get voted through, we met with a counselor, and we just to check in with us to make sure that, you know, we're okay, because it's a big, there's a lot of really big feelings that you feel. And I thought that was pretty endearing that they allowed for that. But the second thing was we sat with the legal department, and they gave us some advice as to what we can talk about when we come back. And one of the things was the process. I think they kind of keep that a little bit of secret. But generally speaking, if we went through this whole thing, I think we're allowed the space now to talk about all of our experiences. But they kind of want to keep the process a secret, just in case it maybe changes or people, you know, are turned off a little bit by what they learn. But because it's pretty complicated.
Right.
There's
right.
a lot to go through.
Sure. And you want to preserve at least some sense of the magic and the sizzle that is that is part of the program.
Sure.
Let's give a really condensed version, if you don't mind, of how you got on the show. I mean, just the nice Reader's Digest condensed version of what that process involves and where you had to go and what you had to do in order to land a coveted space on The Voice in the first place.
Okay. So the first thing, my first audition was in Chicago, and that was last year in August. No, I think it was June, actually. I haven't thought, this is a long time ago. So,
ancient history.
That's right. The first audition was in June, and that was in Chicago. Just went into the studio, had like three songs. They gave me a piece of paper, said, you did as good as you could do. Congratulations. Wait to hear from us. Heard from them in August. They flew us out to an executive callback, and that was the audition that if you made it through, you would sing for the chairs.
So you would be on the show. You would be seen on screen.
That's right. So I made it through that one. And then the following audition, the blind audition, that was where the friends and family came out. That was the first time people saw me on TV. And got two chair turns. After that, it was the battle round. And the battle round was a duet between two people on your team. So I was on John Legend's team, and I sang with Lisa Ramey, who is actually my roommate and was the last time I went out there too. We sang The Joke from Brandi Carlile, and she won that battle round, but I was saved by Kelly Clarkson. So she took me on her team. Then the next round was the cross battles, which is you compete with someone from another team. So the cross battles were myself and Kim Cherry, who's actually voted through to top eight. So she's still on the show. She's still out there kicking butt. So I lost that cross battle. And then Adam Levine and John Legend wanted to save me. So I was saved through that round.
And I think it was mentioned in the Kenosha News article that I read that it's really uncommon for a singer on the show to actually be under, in a sense, the tutelage or the guidance of three different
coaches.
Celebrity coaches.
Yes, yeah. It was wild. I was just happy that I was sticking around, really. The other contestant that has three coaches is Rod, and he's still out there too. He's on team. I think he's on Kelly's team. This is the only remaining contestant on Kelly's team. So Rod had Blake, Kelly, and Adam. So
when you began on the show, when you sang and was that Hunger? Was that the first?
That was the blind. Yep, my blind song.
The blind audition. Mm-hmm. How many singers were part of that, even roughly?
There were roughly 98, I think, that got to... No, I'm sorry. There were like, I think, 50... Gosh, I should have reviewed this before I got here.
No sweat.
it's all
a happy blur, exciting blur.
Yeah, like I know there was 100, and then there was 50, and then there was 32, then there's 24, so it kind of knocks it down.
Right, so
gradually.
whittle.
Right.
So it's really incredible to go back and watch those performances again and just to see the incredible energy that is part of, first of all, everything you did and everything that everybody does.
Yes.
And I should think, even apart from just the results and even apart from what this kind of represents to you professionally, just the opportunity to be on a stage like that and in a setting like that has to be incredible.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. And it just got better and better. The further you got in the competition, the more beautiful the stage. And I think they do that on purpose. They like to show progress, and even with the wardrobe and the makeup and the hair, there are some suggestions that people had for their hairstyle, and they're like, just wait, maybe the next round we'll do that glitter or that clip or something like that. So they keep in mind where they're at in the show, and they really like to they turn you into a star, and they use all of their resources to do it. It's a fantastic process to watch, really.
For those of you just joining us, we're reconnecting with Betsy Ade, and of course she is from Kenosha, and all of Kenosha, all of southeastern Wisconsin is so proud of her and pleased for her for the success that she enjoyed on NBC's television show The Voice. And the season that is currently airing is still airing, but by this point, Betsy Aide is no longer part of the competition, but unhappily, but happily, it means she can talk about more of her experience now, and hence this return visit to the morning show. I think one thing that people would be really interested to know about kind of the various rounds is, first of all, something you touched on about Team Kelly Clarkson versus Team John Legend and so on. Explain to our listeners, for the sake of them that maybe don't follow this show very closely, and we, I'm sure, have listeners who've never seen the show ever.
Yeah, I'm a new watcher myself.
Yeah, right. So explain what this notion of the teams and who's on these various teams and what it means to be on John Legend's team versus Kelly Clarkson's team.
Yeah, I understand that. That's a good question. I think there's obviously the different styles. So Blake is country. Kelly Clarkson has, you know, the pop, like powerhouse type of people on her team. John Legend is more like sultry soul R&B type of styles. And then Adam is a lot of rock. Now, I've seen that's kind of changed a little bit. I think there's a lot of there was a lot of R&B artists on Adam's team. But as far as the different personalities, it's literally what you see on TV from them is who they are face to face. John is very, very chill, very kind of, you know, he'll give advice if he needs to. Kelly is like a cheerleader, you know, she loves everything about you and is just really happy for you. And I think she gives her advice in a very excitable way. Blake is just kind of the dude next door, and you know, they're all very intelligent. They all have great advice. Adam is very, very much hyper, and you know, he gets into stuff really quickly, which I think that was a couple questions people have had for me is, you know, what coach did you like best? And I think that Adam and I really, really worked well together when we worked. We got right into the song, and you know, at first he wasn't sure. This past song that I did was Jet, Are You Gonna Be My Girl, from the band Jet. And I popped in to rehearsal with him, and he said, you know, how do you feel about this song? I think he maybe had a little different idea of what he wanted from me. But I explained, you know, all the things I like about it. It was like toe-tapper, got people going. The last two songs were kind of dark for me and, you know, more angry. And this was a fun tune. And I did it once, and he's like, okay, I'm convinced. Let's go forward. Let's do it. And the second time around, this was kind of cool. The second time around, I sang, you know, I played the guitar for a little bit, for half the song. Then I put it down on the stand. And he got up, and he grabbed the guitar, and he just started jamming with me while I was singing the rest of the song. So my vocal coach said she has a picture that I still have to get from her of us jamming together. And, you know, he's very cool. He didn't really look at me much. But I was like, okay, we're jamming. Wow. This counts as jamming together.
No kidding. And one of many pinch me moments, am I dreaming, absolutely, moments in this whole experience.
Yeah, it was really cool.
So when you're on Kelly Clarkson's team or John Legend's team or Adam Levine's team, that means you are under their guidance.
That's right.
I mean, that's the main thing. And we should remind people that when you blew the roof off the place with the song Hunger right off the bat, there were two of them who actually spun their chairs around, which meant they wanted to work with you. And that was Adam and John.
Yeah, Adam and John. That's right.
And so you were in a position to make a choice then about which team you were going to be part of. Mm-hmm. So are the teams, generally speaking, an equal number of singers? And is there, otherwise, in terms of the competition and who's going to win and who's going to lose, does it much matter whose team you're on? Or is it just a matter of who you are, in a sense, studying with?
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's a whole, you know, that's kind of one of those things where you can try as hard as you possibly can to figure out what team is best to be on, and how am I going to, you know, further myself in this competition. There's, all you can do is you have control over some of the songs that you pick, but not ultimate control. So all you can do is prepare as much as you possibly can and put on the best show without, you know, nerves getting in the way. And so, I mean, that's what I did. And there's, like I said, there's a lot that you can try to figure out, but there's no way to tell.
Right. In some ways, because, you just have to go out and do it.
Yeah, you just go out and do it. I mean, right now, Adam has nobody on his team, right? So they start with the same amount of people. And then as far as the voting goes, when we were on the top 24, there was nobody saved from voting on Adam's team. Nobody was saved. But Adam picked Mari. So out of the four of us, only one of us went through. And Blake had like seven.
Wow.
Kelly had two, and I think John had one or two, maybe. Wow. So,
and this has to do with something that I don't think we really talked about last time at all, namely the whole matter of voting, mm-hmm. of who votes and how people vote and so on. Although, at least at certain stages, it's all about people at home casting votes. Yeah. What do you know about how that happens?
Well, I think – so the first round of voting, there were two platforms that you could vote on. You'd go out to NBC. You could have 10 votes there for one person. You could go out to the Voice app, and you could have 10 votes for the same person. And then they just increased it with each round. They increased the platform by one. So you had NBC.com, you had the Voice app, and then you could vote on what was the third one? Oh my God! There was a third one.
Okay.
And now the next round, there's Xfinity. Mm. The streaming. That's right. So for the top 24, we were able to go into this beautiful Jim Henson studio in LA, and we recorded the song that we were performing for the top 24 before we performed it.
Ah.
So if you went out and you streamed my song once from top to bottom, that would count as a vote. So for the top 24, you had three ways to vote: streaming, and then NBC.com, and then the Voice app.
Wow.
And then this next round, you had four. So this Xfinity, this new thing of Xfinity, which I didn't even know. I don't even know how to work that one yet. So, yeah. So
I noticed when I wanted to rewatch one of your performances, I think it might have been your last one, which was that Are You Going to Be My Girl?
That's right.
Okay. And generally speaking, I don't spend a lot of time reading comments on YouTube just because you can really end up in a very unpleasant swamp.
Right. I stay away from those myself.
Right. However, I want to mention, first of all, I mean, I'm trying not to tempt you to read the comments, mm-hmm. but there really are so many really, really positive comments, at least up at the top of the scroll. Mm-hmm. And one person commented in a really interesting way and said, basically in affirming how much he liked your performance of that particular song, he said, you know, the trouble is it's a bunch of teens who are voting who don't understand, for instance, how difficult and sophisticated this song is and what it's supposed to be. And I've never stopped to think about that. I mean, I don't really know exactly who watches The Voice or who takes the time to cast their votes and so on. But it occurs to me that that might really make a difference on who ultimately succeeds, if it's a bunch of teens and are you connecting with them versus somebody who's a little more seasoned and maybe has a little more nuanced appreciation about this kind of music and its challenges.
Yeah. Well, I think that generally speaking, I fell into the rock genre. And so I think with the song choices that I had, I kept that in mind. I didn't really branch out much, but you're right. There's complicated songs, but the general age group for the people who are watching the show is like 18 to 25 year olds. And I mean, which is awesome because I was exposed to so many cool songs that I've never, you know, I don't really keep up with the pop culture much. So they're really great songs out there, you know, catchy tunes, but, you know, who's to say? It is what it is. And, it was fun. I had a great time.
We had fun watching. For those of you just joining us, we're talking today with Betsy Aide and talking about her experience on the NBC series The Voice. So you touched on something that I think is really important and also probably kind of complicated and worth talking about, and that is the selection of songs. And one of the things I want to kind of burrow in on a little bit is something you said that intrigues me, that we have some control, but we don't have full control, or some words to that effect. So untangle that for us a little bit. I mean, when it comes to each of these rounds, who's in charge and who ultimately gets to make that really paramount question? I mean, there's nothing more central to all of this than what song am I going to sing in the next round? So help us understand how that works and how those choices ultimately get made.
Okay, yeah, and I think Kelly Clarkson had made that comment when I was out there last for the top 24. She said the song selection from here on out is essential. You have to make sure that you are picking the right songs for yourself. Before we left the last time, a few months back, we sat with the music director and the people who, you know, the guy in charge of the people who select the songs for you or pick from your selections. And he had mentioned that the reason why they give you the amount of songs to choose from is because you're not really sure, even as an artist, what songs you can sing. Like, you might think that you could sing the crap out of a song, and really it's not the right one for you. And so, and I, you know, I believe in some of that, especially like with something like television. You know, how does it look? How does it feel? Is it, you know, there's so many different moving parts that they are thinking about.
Sure.
And we signed up for that a long time ago. You know, like, you don't really have a ton of control and independence. You know, that's not what this thing is all about. But they do nurture you, and they do help you with what they're, you know, they compromise.
Right. So I suppose part of this is, and I hadn't thought about this before, that you really can't sing. I'm not implying that you are inclined to sing these kind of songs, but, you know, you really can't sing a song in this kind of setting that's dirty.
Yeah.
Or and even certain kinds of songs that might be really, really dark or go to certain places that are extremely painful. I mean, that in the context of a full rock concert or something else might be perfectly acceptable, but not on this particular stage and not on this particular show.
They know their audience. They certainly do, and they that's what you need to do in any like public speaking events. Like, you have to know who you're talking to. You have to know who you're performing for, and you know, there's a little give them what they need kind of thing. And I think it was just fine for me. I enjoyed the process. I mean, it was daunting. I mean, the first time we got 600 songs to choose 20 of, and I'm like, how do you do that?
Wow.
So
is that for hunger?
That was for hunger. That's right.
Mm-hmm. So there was a mass of 600 different potential songs, and then from those you had to choose 20
from, and we ranked from top to bottom. So number one would be the one that you knew really well, you knew you could just nail, and then so on and so forth. And they chose a song along with two other songs for you to perform for the executives, but they picked that one.
So they picked Hunger.
Yes, out of my choices.
Wow.
Yes, they picked that.
Do you remember where that was in
it
your
list? It was
number
two.
Oh.
And I never heard it before. Before I put it on my ranking list, I loved Florence and the Machine, and I've never heard the song before. It was from her 2017 album. And I think it was perfect for the message that it brought. That was perfect for my life. Her complexities, like, I've always admired the way she sings, and it was just a different structured type of song. And so I thought that would maybe set me aside, compared to the, you know, verse chorus the stuff you hear in pop. So
right, it was incredible. I mean, and I didn't know that song either, which is no surprise. But I was absolutely blown away. And the thing that really blows me away as we're talking is I can't believe you didn't know that song, in the sense of how emphatically and assuredly you sang it. I never in a million years would have guessed that that
was
a brand new song to you. What was the roughly kind of time frame between the moment you hunger was chosen for you and when you had to actually go on that stage and sing it? Are we talking about days, weeks, months?
I think it was pushing a month. So I had mentioned this before, how much time they give you to prepare. If you think about it, you know, that's a high pressure situation to be on TV. And I think they understand that. So they hook you up with a vocal coach. They make sure that you're doing the right things to prepare. Maybe you're struggling with, you know, a note or two, which I was. I was struggling with that really high note. And that's something that I will keep with me forever, is the how my range increased by almost two steps. And so I'm, you know, there's so many things that you take away from a show like this, but yeah, preparing for that, I think we had plenty of time. I think people do it in a shorter amount of time, but yeah.
How much of your rehearsal with those musicians was just in a room someplace versus on that stage? I'm assuming you had at least one or two, in a sense, dress rehearsals in the space where you ultimately got to perform that song on the show?
Yes. So we had, they're called on-camera and off-camera rehearsals. So there was an off-camera rehearsal and an on-camera rehearsal for each of my coaches. And the off-camera is, well, the one with Adam was actually on the stage, but it was, you know, off to the, like, the right or left of it. And those are just kind of, you know, the off-camera is like you can swear and you can just say how you feel and nobody has...
Throw a lamp against the wall.
It's all rumors. Like, nobody has proof of it. so that was, you know, those are kind of fun. The on-camera, it's essentially the same thing, but they show, you know, more of the work and what you're doing for the song in particular.
Right. I wonder, and I want to talk about a couple of the other songs as well, but how strange a position are you placed in where you're the singer, it's ultimately you, and you're an experienced singer, and you're a very good singer. And I can think of other settings or situations where a singer is really young and green and eager to take every bit of advice they get from anybody. But when someone is as experienced and seasoned as and capable and assured as you are there ever kind of awkward moments where you sort of feel like, well, no, I want to do it this way, not the way you want me to do it? Or did that not come up too much?
No, I don't remember ever feeling that way.
Wow.
I remember being more of what you said previous, like the, I'll take any advice you give me. I know what you guys have done in your life. I want to make this a career, and anything that's going to make me better, which I, you know, you have to kind of trust your coaches and the people around you to give you only good advice. You know, they're not going to do anything but try to make you better. And I think going into that with an attitude of, well, I'm going to sing the way I sing, I think it's a big mistake.
Right.
So
there are probably other shows where that's the way it could be done or should be done, but that's just not the way this particular show is set up. I mean, if you don't welcome that, then you have no business even auditioning for The Voice.
Yeah.
Because that's what
that's
what the whole point is.
Yeah.
I want to be sure to talk to you about this really interesting battle thing with you and another singer. In this case, her name is Lisa Raimi. Lisa Raimi. And this is really an incredible powerhouse moment.
Yes.
Explain to our listeners who haven't seen this
what
happens in a moment like this and what happened with you.
So when we got back from doing our, you know, we got through the blinds and the next stage is the battle rounds. The battle rounds, there was a 2-month period where we came home and then we got flown back out for the battle rounds. Lisa was my roommate, and the first day that we stepped off the plane, they showed us our blind, like they showed how we performed. It hadn't been aired yet. So we got to see what it looked like on stage, which is very exciting. And then they told us what song we're going to sing and who we're singing it with. And, you know, I was immediately relieved. I've always admired her. I saw her, you know, back and forth. We never really got close. But we got to work right away. And it was a great exchange. It was the start of a beautiful relationship. And, you know, her and I have very different voices. So there's the beginning of that, of the song, The Joke from Brandi Carlile, has a beautiful, slow space where vibrato is necessary. That's how Brandi sings it. And it's like, that was perfect for Lisa and her style to just start it. And so naturally, you know, we just started picking out spots that featured our type of voice, and it worked. And we had a wonderful time practicing, and, you know, people around us were excited for us, and they were pulling for us because they saw what a good time we had. And it was a wonderful moment.
It was very evident in terms of the performance itself. I mean, you looked like you were best friends. I mean, truly loving every moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't watch this show enough to know how uncommon that is. If sometimes those situations where you are in effect sharing a song, going back and forth, and also competing.
Right.
I mean, I really think it's far more likely that that would be a pretty uncomfortable situation, and where the singing turns into something else than what it was in your collaboration, which really was a true collaboration.
Yeah, it was. I felt that the same way. But I think that, generally speaking, with the rest of the contestants, what we've heard is there were times where it didn't really work out, like with the personalities, but you are on the stage together, and there's no way you're getting through that without the person you're singing with. And so I think that allows for a connection without saying. So
do you know if what goes into those pairings? I mean, when they, for instance, made the decision to pair you with Lisa Raimi on that song, do they do so believing that that's a great song for both of you and that you'll both sound wonderful in this song?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope. I think John Legend picked that song for us, and that was a shock. You know, Brandi Carlile is now coming out as this huge star, where I've watched her for 20 years, and she's been on the grind for a long time, and she's still a little underground before this year and all those Grammys that she won. But it was wonderful, and you know, we did our best with it, and we were thankful for how it turned out. You know, we got through it together, and I think we have similar styles. You know, some people thought of us as a rocker, the rocker chicks. And I think there's a little bit of planning that out. I mean, if you look at, like, Maylin, who is, you know, does a lot of beautiful ballads, and or you look at Sean Sounds, where he does R&B and soul, it'd be weird to pair us together. So I think that there is premeditated things that go along there.
Right. How about the fact that you were roommates? I mean, first of all, is that normal for you to be,
I don't know,
rooming with your battle partner?
I'm not sure.
And I'm also curious how random that is. I mean, do they have some reason to think that the two of you would really hit it off as roommates, which fortunately you did?
Yeah, it's possible. Again, like, I don't know what they're thinking. I never really do. I think that I try to stay away from thinking too much about how they're working. But it did work out well with us, and I know that we weren't the only battle partners as roommates, and I think it only we took advantage of it because we had our own space to to perform anytime we wanted.
Right, and talk through
and talk
think
through
about
it. And, you know.
Well, and I should say that it's one of the most dramatic moments in your whole time on The Voice, because when the four judges weigh in on what they saw, which was just this incredible performance, they're all really conflicted in terms of picking a winner and a loser. It's like there's no loser here. I mean,
we both were pretty evenly matched, I would say.
Pretty incredible. The next stage, is that when you sang as part of, Is This Love?
That was for the top 24. So
okay,
the next stage after the battle round is cross battles, where you performed a song against a person on another team.
Oh, right.
So Kim Cherry was on Team Blake, and I was on Team Kelly by that time.
So Kelly had saved you after...
Kelly had saved me after
the battle.
That's right. And so, and that was wonderful. I sang You Ought to Know from Alanis Morissette, which I've done with the band for years. So I was totally, completely happy with that choice.
Yeah.
I was very excited to sing that song.
Cool. One of the more interesting things is, so we have still Is This Love and Are You Gonna Be My Girl Then?
Yep.
Which take us to the end of the process. So
yep. So then the cross battles was the first. That was the first voting, and I lost that battle
to Kim.
To Kim Cherry, she went through, and then Kelly saved me right away, and so worked with Kelly for a little bit, and then we did the. Then we had our performance with Adam, so the Bob Marley tune.
Yeah, Is This Love?
Is This Love? That's right.
So I think there were four of you on the stage.
There were four of us on the stage, and we learned it 2 days before we learned our parts, and then we learned we did a little choreography, and the day we performed was our stage rehearsal with Adam, and so we went. And we had a rehearsal. We went through it twice, and then we performed it.
Wow, that almost seems like something from Iron Chef or something, where you have people cooking things, and at the last second, and you have to use avocados in this recipe or whatever. I mean, it's almost like that is a moment in this competition set up to be difficult.
Yeah,
in the sense
they certainly test your professionalism. That's for sure. Which is. You know, another thing that I'm going to use going forward, like the pressure that I felt, I think that I can recognize how I'll feel in another situation. I can only imagine, you know, I hope that this is bringing us to another level in our band, and I'm ready, and I know how to deal. So it's a wonderful thing.
Well, and I think it would be hard enough to just master a solo on your own in the space of a couple of days. Mm-hmm. But it's really kind of mind-boggling to me to master something in which there are three other singers and you have to somehow find at least a certain level of comfort and ease and confidence with one another.
Yeah.
And I'm really astounded that there was as much of that as there was, given the short amount of time there was to try to create that and foster it.
Yeah. Well, we had, the teams that I've been on, there's an immediate connection, an immediate sense of love and nurturing. And, you know, we had a good time. We had a good time together. I think that you have a goal in mind, and you know, again, like with the battles that you perform with another person, you're only as good as your teammates, you know, like it's only going to, if they're successful, you're going to be successful too. So I think
absolutely.
We all had that in mind.
Right. Sounds like a bumper sticker that's on my father's car, which says, we all do better when we all do better.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Yeah, and that bumper sticker has nothing to do with The Voice or what we're specifically talking about, but I think that it matches up pretty well. When I watched Are You Gonna Be My Girl, which I think then is the last thing you sang on The Voice.
That's right.
One of the things that really struck me was, and I'm sure this was true with all of the songs, but it seems to me it was especially true of that song, what a visually spectacular production it was. Yeah. I mean, with just this battery of multicolored lights and just down to the smallest detail.
Yep.
I mean, it was just really incredible to experience. Now, what goes into putting all of that together? And do you have much of a role in that? Or is this a case where you are kind of placing yourself in the hands of handlers and trusting the decisions that they're going to make?
Yeah, I think it's more of that. I mean, it's always been most of that. They do allow you to, as far as wardrobe, hair and makeup, I think that's the only thing that you have really control of. Well, and the song selection, like I mentioned earlier. But they have it all in mind. Like they know what they're doing and where they're going, and what they're thinking three steps ahead already. Mm. And so, you know, as far as your look goes, they ask you to bring a certain amount of clothes, and they pick from your clothes, and they're like, okay, well, I love this. I don't like that. You should never wear that again, which I got a couple times.
Oh, dear.
But you learn from it, and like even sense of style. Like I feel better going shopping because I kind of know what I'm doing now. But they ask your opinion. You know, what are you looking for makeup? Like Joan Jett? What do you want? More simple, something or other. And they work with your ideas. I was of the mindset that they're the professionals, and they know my song, and they kind of match it up from there. And I was like, what do you think?
Go for it.
Yeah.
So was that a song you chose for yourself, or was that chosen for you?
That was another pick from a certain amount of songs, and we'll pick from yours. Picks,
gotcha.
Kind of thing.
Do you listen to all the possibilities, and do you actually sing through all the possibilities before making that choice, or is it, in a sense, a quicker and simpler process than that?
Yeah, it depended on how long I had to choose. We had a certain time limit to choose from, and I did listen to songs I've never heard before. That's how I came up with Hunger, but mostly I picked songs that I was already exposed to, that I think I could pull off, that kind of sat in my wheelhouse.
Mm.
Because I knew that would be the best decision, I would be able to put out the best performance that way if I kind of knew it. And also it was part of my genre, you know, type of songs that I've been singing for a while.
Right. So how would you characterize the overall relationship that you had with the other singers that were part of this show? How much time did you even get to spend with? I mean, it's one thing when it's Lisa Ramey and she's your roommate, or somebody else that you're actually singing with and preparing with, versus others who are on the show. I mean, how much of a connection is there? And generally speaking, what is that relationship? I mean, are these all of these people friends of yours? Will they be friends of yours for a long time?
Yeah. I would consider them great friends. We have two group texts going between the top 33 and the top 24, and I'm sure it's kind of whittled down now. But we still are in touch. I mean, there's communication going on even now, and probably will continue. There's connections made. I'm trying to get together a handful of contestants to share shows with, because I think our fans would just love that. Like the Bundys. I feel like the Bundys went home way too soon. It was the first trio that they've ever had on the show.
Mm.
And I am desperately trying to get them to Racine or Kenosha to play with us, because I know that the fans would love that. So the people who are kind of in my genre that would make sense to share shows with, I'm trying to keep connections and share shows in the future. So.
Wow. So tell our listeners when you are going to be on stage next and what that event is going to be like.
Yeah, so we booked a gig at 58 Below.
This is Well-Known Strangers.
Well-Known Strangers, yep. And we're actually rebranding. So it's going to be Betsy Aid and the Well-Known Strangers for, you know, purely marketing reasons. People know me more than the Well-Known Strangers on a national level, and So if they are searching for me, we want them to find our music.
Sure.
So we're rebranding that way. We have a ton of new music that we are just itching to get in the recording studio. There's still a certain amount of holding time that we have per contract. And so we're going to get in the studio, have more music. We're planning on feeding the fans more often. So instead of waiting, you know, a couple months for a new song, we're planning on doing it every 2 or 3 weeks. So, but at 58 Below, our show sold out under 10 hours, which is amazing.
What a shock. That's like the least unexpected announcement I've ever heard. I mean, of course it sold out in 10 hours. So.
Yeah, that was. I mean, it is still shocking, you know, even the attention, the people who are still reaching out and wanting interviews like yourself, like this, it's humbling. It's wonderful that people are so emotionally attached to the story. And I'll share it until it gets old and boring
right.
for other people, because it's I get to relive it all the time.
Right. And, so you know, exciting so in so many ways. And the last time you were here, you were with your beautiful partner, Chantel Godlewski.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great to have her perspective. And I remember in the course of that conversation, you also mentioned your young son, maybe 10 years old or
yep,
something like
Talon.
That. And
that's right.
I suspect that you are not the only person who feels a tremendous sense of relief that at last this story can be shared a little more fully, because it was a long time. This had to be kept to yourselves. That couldn't have been easy.
Yeah, no, it wasn't easy. And I was able to share it with a small group of people that I trusted, and because I think I would have exploded if I didn't. But Talon, he's a fifth grader now, and he wanted to get the whole school together and tell, you know, make an announcement.
Oh.
Like, he knew how big it was, and but he kind of kept it to his classroom. And we were able to actually sing together at one of his dances that he had at Grant Elementary. They asked me to perform a couple songs, and I had him sing a song with me, Bruno Mars, Count on Me. So I played my ukulele and he sang, and like I DJ'd a little bit. And so it was really nice. It's nice.
To say the least. So some normalcy returns to your life now, but with this great source of excitement in the heart of it. And of course, people are so excited to have you back on the stage close to home. And we want to mention that in addition to the sold out homecoming concert on May 31st, you are slated to perform at Pride Fest in Milwaukee on the 8th of June.
That's right. And that's at the Miller Stage, 345.
Fantastic. So, yeah. And many times thereafter. So, well, Betsy Aid, it's been terrific to follow this story. And I appreciate, among many other things, that you are such an open and articulate storyteller. I mean, you tell this story so very, very well. That's part of what makes. Oh no, it's great. I mean, you've taken us inside the experience just about as well as anybody possibly could. I mean,
cool.
Only you know what it really felt like to be on The Voice and to experience all of this, the highs and the lows. But we're glad that you loved the experience so much, and it's mm-hmm. been exciting to follow it. And thank you for being part of the morning show today.
Cool.
Best wishes to you and everybody you care about.
Thank you. Thank you for being interested enough to chatting with me.
Betsy Aid talking about her experience on NBC's The Voice, and a well-known member of Betsy Aid and Well-Known Strangers. Mm-hmm. And I'm Gregory Berg. And tomorrow on The Morning Show, the interview originally scheduled to air today, and that's about NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, the Kenosha chapter. We're going to be meeting the new co-president of the organization, Lisa Zanin, and talking, among other things, about their vigil coming up on Wednesday evening. And Dr. James Kinchin will join us from UW Parkside's music department on Wednesday to talk about a very exciting program, which involves a collaboration between one of the choirs at Parkside and a choir in China, which that group from China will be coming here and Parkside's choir will be going there. The kind of exciting exchange that does not happen every day. And we'll be talking about it on Wednesday's morning show. We'll also be introducing you to composer Dana Wilson, whose piece Hold Fast to Dreams is going to receive its world premiere this weekend with the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. It's archived at